Evans v. Erickson and Murray. Mr. Gonzalez.
Good morning, Your Honors. Richard Gonzalez on behalf of Mr. Steffens, the appellate. This is an appeal of a grant of summary judgment in a Title VII and Section 1981 retaliation claim. And I'd like to start by addressing the promotion claims, and in particular by addressing what I think is the city's most prominent argument, and an argument that was highlighted in the lower court's opinion. And that is the argument that we failed to establish that Commissioner Picardi was the decision maker with respect to these four promotions. However, three of the four interviewers, Mr. Erickson, Mr. Tatara, and Mr. Murray, all testified that it was Commissioner Picardi who was the decision maker on these promotions. That they acted merely as recommenders, they said. That they filled out numerical scoring sheets and turned them into the commissioner's office. Well, what the city argues, in effect, is that they were mistaken. That unbeknownst to Mr. Erickson and Mr. Tatara and Mr. Murray, they were in effect the actual decision makers because unbeknownst to them, Commissioner Picardi had delegated that authority to them. So the city argues, sure, Commissioner Picardi was aware of Mr. Steffens' long history of racial discrimination protests, but the interviewers claimed, testified that they were not aware. Now, my
argument.
I'm not
sure why it helps you, really, if it's Commissioner Picardi. I know that there's this debate, and it may be a more straightforward path for the city if it's the four interviewers, Murray, Erickson, Tatra, and Lonergan. But why is it so helpful if it's Picardi? The only fact you add is that he knew about the earlier case, but he is clearly in these four decisions following the recommendation of the untainted interviewer. So if he were overriding that recommendation, if one of the interviewers had recommended Mr. Steffens, if that's how he pronounces his name, then maybe there would be something at stake here. But I just don't see why it's all that helpful to you.
Well, Judge, I have two responses. I think number one is that there is at least contradictory evidence because the three of the interviewers insist that they weren't the decision maker. They were just filling out these score
so
sheets.
So what? I mean, it's clear that they do make the recommendations that they make for the various people, Thomas, Murray, Lopez, and West. And it's clear that Picardi follows those recommendations. So isn't this much ado about very little, if not nothing?
Well, Your Honor, I would say the reality of the situation is that squarely because of the city's longstanding policy of Commissioner Picardi appointing these people himself to these acting positions without a process at all, that the commissioner, in effect, in at least two of the four promotions at issue here, he simply pre-selected the successful candidate by appointing him to acting status, and then the interviewers simply confirm the promotion that Commissioner Picardi has already made.
But why does that give rise to an inference of discrimination? Because certainly this court has cases in which we've said that you can't necessarily infer discrimination from the single fact that it's a subjective selection process. Sometimes people add additional evidence, you know, maybe a pattern or some other kind of evidence, but just because of that, it's not. And it seems to me the worst you could say about Commissioner Picardi hand-picking people to be acting is that it was perhaps subjective. But I don't see any evidence that you've introduced suggesting that he has some racial animus that he's implementing.
Well, we do have an evidentiary issue that I will address in a moment that I think helps bolster that claim. But yes, we're trying to show that Commissioner Picardi, the inference should be that he was retaliating and that he, in effect, was the decision maker because, in effect, the city does the process backwards.
So why is picking acting heads of these very, you know, these manager and director jobs something that I just don't see where is the evidence from which you can take that fact and draw an inference that this is really all a very elaborate scheme to retaliate against Mr. Steffens?
Well, again, I think if we take into account the statements, and I will address their admissibility, I think that it was an intent, a declaration of intent, not to promote Mr. Steffens, and that Mr. Picardi did just that. that he appointed others that we argue in the briefs, and we try to make the arguments in the briefs, that they were less qualified individuals and clearly less qualified. But I realize that's a difficult road to go down. I'm familiar with the decisions of this court that talk about comparative promotions. But here, I think they were pre-selections. For the first job, Mr. Picardi had already chosen Mr. Cleveland Thomas. And the interviewer, Murray, said that he knew that. He, in fact, had discussed that with him back at the time of the selection. So he was just recommending back to Picardi what his boss, what he assumed his boss wanted. For the second job...
I'm repeating myself, but I understand that. I'm assuming all of these facts as you state them, but I just don't see where that next inference comes from. Why does that illustrate retaliation?
Well, I think on that point, it's that we claim an inference that there was a retaliatory animus on Mr. Picardi's. So we have a decision maker.
I mean, it would have been just as retaliatory toward everybody else who interviewed for that first position that went to Cleveland Thomas.
Well, that's true, Judge, but I still think we have to put this in the context of the typical traditional analysis of employment claims. Now, if we have a prima facie case, and I would argue that we do, if we can get the statements in, the differences in qualifications, I think we have a prima facie case, the employer still has to articulate a legitimate, non-discriminatory reason. If we look, for example, at the aviation job for a moment, and I will go so far as to make the argument that it is virtually undisputed in this record, virtually undisputed, that Mr. West had been pre-selected. Now, the court has read the city's explanation in its brief, but it cannot possibly be true. The going-away party for Mr. West was held in late September 04. He then interviewed for the job on October 12 and started the job on October 14. It is simply not plausible that in the days after the party, this first alleged job fell through, that he quickly arranged to interview for a second identical job, and that he started the job 2 days later.
Does the record show how many people interviewed for that position, manager of vehicle maintenance?
That interview, I believe, was five individuals, Judge.
Five.
I believe it was five individuals. Remember also that Mr. West's personnel file reflects no such prior job offer.
Does mean that Mr. Steffens is one of four disappointed applicants.
True, but again, I'm saying...
Why isn't it retaliation against one, two, and three?
Well, it may be, but Your Honor, we're the ones suing, and I think that we're in a protected category because of the history of complaints. My argument is it has to be placed in that traditional analysis. I admit that plaintiffs rarely have that smoking gun sort of evidence, but if we have a prima facie case, they have to articulate a reason. Now, their reason is meaningless if there was a pre-selection. The fact that they made numerical scoring is of no significance at all if it was just going through the motions of a pre-selection.
But I'm not sure those are inconsistent. You could have kind of a presumptive pre-selection and then hold the interviews and be prepared, if you are impressed by somebody in the interviews, to give the job to that other person.
Oh, Judge, I think that's perfectly true, but I'm saying why should we give that inference to the city on a summary judgment motion? That could well be true. I think that, remember, Mr. Lonergan testified it was a close call, he said, between West and Steffens. But I think clearly he was chosen before the interview, and this court has said a number of times.
Lonergan doesn't say that, of course.
No, I'm saying that is the reasonable conclusion, that he had been pre-selected. This court has said many times, as recently as 2007 in the Bomady decision, that the employer's reasons have to be plausible. There has to be plausibility about them. And that if there isn't, it is enough to allow that jury to infer from the falsehood that retaliation is to blame if you have a prima facie case.
But you do recall that Lonergan didn't know about any of Steffens' history.
Well, that was his testimony, but again, Your Honor, that's an inference that we would argue for.
There's no evidence to the contrary at all. Your theory is that it's Picardi who's tainting the pool, not the four interviewers.
We're saying that would, in effect, be asking for direct evidence in a case where the employer, we argue, has not truly articulated a legitimate non-discriminatory reason. It's as though the city is saying, prove that Mr. Steffens would have been the one to get this promotion. And they're asking us to prove it through reference to the minutiae of a numerical scoring system that even they didn't really use if there were a pre-selection. Now, that's a very difficult burden for the plaintiff, to prove that we would have won a scoring system that wasn't really used, or that we would have won a competition that never really took place. I mean, if I choose one person instead of another to work with me, and I say I had five reasons for the decision, but it turns out that I simply flipped the coin or picked the one that someone told me to pick, it's very hard for me to say to someone else, prove that had I done what I said I did, I would have gone the other way. Well, I see I'm entering my rebuttal. Thank you.
Ms. Luz?
Good morning, and may it please the court. Steffens' retaliation claims fail because there is no evidence that the promotional decisions at issue or the other conduct about which he complains were motivated by his complaints of racial discrimination. This case involves four promotional decisions that involved five different interviewers, none of whom there is evidence knew about Steffens' complaints of retaliation. Each and every time, their recommendations were followed. Steffens tries to link the decision to someone who did know about his complaints, Commissioner Picardi, but this approach fails for two reasons. The first of which is there is no evidence that Commissioner Picardi himself harbored any animosity over the complaints. Knowledge alone is not enough. Knowledge of his complaints alone is not enough to establish this. And Figueroa's testimony is not enough to establish this either. She identified two people who vented about Steffens' complaints, neither of whom were involved or influenced the decision. Velazquez had no role in the promotional process whatsoever, and Laura Johnston merely processed the paperwork for the person who the recommender had selected.
Was there any evidence that Commissioner Picardi knew what Velazquez or Johnston was saying?
No, there's no evidence on this record that he was aware of what statements or those statements that were made. The second reason that this attempt to rest on Commissioner Picardi's motives fails because there's also no evidence that Commissioner Picardi made the selections at issue. It is true that the interviewer said that it was for Commissioner Picardi to make the final decision. He had the final authority, but the record shows how that authority was exercised to approve the recommendations of the interviews every time. Nothing in the record contradicts that that's how the decision was made in this case.
Maybe you should address this sort of second layer theory that Commissioner Picardi really was the decision maker because he was pre-selecting and placing in the acting positions the people that he wanted, and then the interview process was, in a sense, predetermined because the interviewers knew that this was the acting person in the job, and so that takes us back to Picardi.
Well, there's no evidence to support that that's how this occurred. Commissioner Picardi was involved. There's evidence that he was involved in selecting two of the acting candidates. But after that point, there was, when it came time to select the person for the permanent position, there was an open interview process, and we have testimony from all the interviewers about the reasons they ranked the candidates they selected the highest.
So and the record contains evidence of, you know, postings and applicants and interview and the whole process that was used.
There's a record about the process that was used in this case. It included obtaining an eligibility list from the Department of Human Resources and contacting interviewers, et cetera. And that was the process for the interview process.
What about this fishy going away party 2 weeks before? I know the city's saying, well, that was an earlier job, but isn't that something that's fairly disputable at this stage of the litigation?
Well, I would say that we have nothing but West's testimony to explain why that party occurred at that time, and certainly nothing to suggest that a complaint about racial discrimination was instead what motivated that decision. And we've heard a lot about pre-selection here this morning, but there's nothing to suggest, especially when there's no evidence whatsoever that the decision makers even knew about Stephens' complaints of racial discrimination. Over in the Department of Aviation, these were even officials in another department. They knew nothing about his complaints. There's no evidence to suggest that that retaliation for complaints of race discrimination explains what happened regarding to the going away party.
And the commissioner made the appointment of all the interviewers.
Excuse
the commissioner
me?
Made the appointment of the interview people who were doing the interviewing.
Well, what the record shows in this case, Commissioner Picardi had the final authority. He had delegated that to Al Fator, who in turn delegated to Laura Johnston the authority to sign off on the paperwork to hire whoever had ranked the highest in the interview.
But who picked Murray, Erickson, Tatra, and Lonergan? Who selected them to be the interview?
I believe the record that Commissioner Picardi testified that was Al Fator's role to select who would go into the interview.
So Commissioner Picardi didn't have anything to do directly with selecting the interviewers.
That's correct. And finally, there's no evidence that the other conduct about which Stephens complains was motivated by his complaints of race discrimination either. His brief on page 30 suggests, when he's talking about his assignments and other conduct at work, such as being yelled at or stared at, that there may be many inconceivably legitimate reasons for those instances. It's his burden to show, as part of his prima facie case, that it's reasonable to infer that his complaints, rather than any of those legitimate reasons, explain why that conduct occurred. And there's nothing to suggest that any of that occurred because of his complaints or even involved people who knew about those complaints.
The settlement was when, 1994? I'm trying to remember when.
2004.
Oh, 2004. Okay,
yes.
So it was relatively recent. He filed the lawsuit in 1994, and then the settlement comes much later.
That's correct, Your Honor. For the remainder of our arguments, we'll rest on our brief. We do ask that the judgment of the district court be affirmed.
Thank you, Ms. Lewis. How much time, Ms.
I'd like to very briefly address two issues, the first being the evidence issue. We proffered two statements. One was by Fleet Management's HR person, Laura Johnston, and Judge Hibbler ruled it was admissible but not probative. The second statement was attributed to Commissioner Picardi and his chief administrative assistant. Judge Hibbler ruled that one inadmissible. In regard to the Laura Johnston statements, Mr. Stephens' co-worker Ruth Figueroa testified that Johnston frequently vented to her about Mr. Stephens having raised complaints of discrimination, and that she said to her, quote, that damned less again, I have to change all these applications because of him. Now, admittedly, that statement is a somewhat ambiguous comment that standing alone doesn't prove retaliation, but I think it's more significant than the lower court allows it to be. The city argues, hey, Johnston was giving Mr. Stephens a favor by allowing him to be interviewed. But the reasonable inference from that remark, now I have to change these applications. The reasonable inference is she was directed to do so in order to make the process look fair. And remember, Ms. Figueroa's testimony was she was angry when she said that, not happy. In regard to the statements attributed to Ms. Velazquez, I argue that these are admissible party opponent admissions under Rule 801 D2D. And I think that the parties brief this, and I think the parties agree on the three cases that are relevant. We just disagree on the conclusion. But I think.
But what evidence is there that this was within the scope of her duties? I don't see how it can be a party admission unless she had some responsibility for this.
Well, see, I see no distinction between this case and Nicolny, and that's the first of the three, the Nicolny versus Painter, because they're like here, a non-decision maker who was an agent of the decision maker tells the plaintiff that she was fired for an illegal reason.
But he has a personnel job, and she didn't.
But I believe the court has ruled that there isn't a personal involvement requirement, and I think it's a reasonable inference.
Well, a personnel, I mean, in Nicolni, the declarant advises the decision maker about hiring, firing, personnel types of matters, and I don't see that evidence with respect to Velazquez.
But I think it's a reasonable inference that the chief right-hand person, the chief assistant to the commissioner of the city department. And I will admit, Judge, we do not have a written job description of Velazquez in the record of the case. But I think it's a reasonable assumption. And remember, she's relaying a remark of Picardi as well as her own opinion.
But she's a clerical employee. She's not an advisor or in any other way a participant in any decision-making. She's an administrative assistant clerical employee.
But, Your Honor, I'd say regardless of that, if the nature of her remark is, hey, Commissioner Picardi is very angry about the complaints that your friend, Mr. Steffens, has been bringing, I think that's a party opponent admission. The advisory committee notes to Rule 802 say there should be a generous treatment of the avenue to admissibility for that kind of evidence. The final point I wanted to get out is that we do raise other retaliation claims that I think are significant, and I think the lower court gave some short shrift to. Just to mention the most significant is Ms. Figueroa's testimony that she was instructed to assign the less significant car damage work to Mr. Steffens because he was viewed as a problem. Now, again, an ambiguous remark. That could mean many things, but I think on summary judgment, we're entitled to that inference. If the city had evidence that what they really meant was he wasn't as good at this area of work, they could have put in some evidence to that effect. But there's no evidence in the record that he was less talented, less skilled than any of these other adjusters, and in fact, he was the most experienced of them. So we think the inference we're entitled to is, in that one example, he got inferior assignments. It wasn't his imagination, because Ms. Figueroa is the one giving them out, and she said he was getting inferior assignments. In the briefs, we try to give additional examples of what we think is actionable adverse action that the city never offers a reason. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gonzalez. Well, thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.